Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hey, Reverend Jamie.
Hi. Angel Caitlin?
Yeah, it's me.
Or wife Caitlin.
No, okay. I'm guardian angel Caitlin, your guardian angel. But now that you mention your wife, I just want to say that she's awesome and like so pretty and I love her. Is that cool?
Yeah, me too. I just like, I'm busy running the entire church.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't really have time for her and I can have her.
Well, no, oh. But let's make sure to not really ask her how she feels at any point.
Yeah.
Just well, to be sure.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That went so well.
All right, good talk. Good talk. Okay, now I banish you back to heaven and make sure to Men in Black style wipe my memory before you go. So it's as if the movie didn't happen.
Exactly. But little Jeremiah, he's going to remember me.
Well, yeah, because he has childlike wonder. He believes in the magic of Christmas, something, something, the little bell from Polar Express, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful.
Anyway, hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast.
Great intro as usual. We're recording earlier in the day than usual. You have to cut us some slack.
No, I think the people loved it.
It's true. My name's Jamie Loftus.
My name is Caitlin Durante, and this is our show where we examine movies through an intersectional feminist lens using the Bechdel test as a jumping off point. But Reverend Jamie, what is that?
I could get used to this. So the Bechdel test is a media metric originally created or co-created by Alison Bechdel with her friend Liz Wallace, originally as a bit for her comic from the 1980s, Dykes to Watch Out For, originally a way of talking about how women were rarely talking to each other about anything in a movie, much less not men. The version of the test we use as we require that two people of a marginalized gender with names talk to each other about something other than a man for two lines of dialogue or more.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a journey today.
yeah, true.
And we have, because it's the holiday season, we are covering holiday movies. And boy, do we have a holiday movie for you today. Longtime request, The Preacher's Wife from 1996, mm-hmm. starring Whitney Houston and Denzel Washington and Courtney B. Vance and directed by Penny Marshall. I mean, you can't argue with that lineup.
You certainly cannot. And here with us to chat about the movie are the hosts of the podcast, Two Black Girls, One Rose. It's a podcast uncovering what we can learn about modern dating, love, and relationships from popular television. It's Natasha and Justine.
Hi, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing us this beautiful, wholesome, and a little weird movie.
It's one of my favorite remakes, The Preacher's Wife.
I didn't realize it was a remake until I started doing the research for it. So yeah, it's adapted from a older movie from 1947 called The Bishop's Wife, which was adapted from a novel of the same name from, I think, published in the 20s or something like that.
Yeah, the original starred Cary Grant and Loretta Young, I think.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's right.
I did not watch it, but it seemed to be very
popular. I've never watched it. No.
That's right. No. I don't know where I would watch it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I feel like in like the 30s and 40s, there was a bajillion movies about the spirit of Christmas. Mm. And then also in the 90s. And then now it's mostly just like Netflix movies about a woman getting bonked on the head on Christmas Eve.
So true. Yeah. So tell us about your relationship, your history with this movie. Justine, do you want to go first?
Sure. I can go first. I know this movie line by line. I could play every single character. I could sing every single song.
Yes.
At the very beginning of the movie where she was using ad-libs to kind of call and response with the rest of the congregation in the church, I knew every single cue. I knew the lean. I knew the choreography. I know this movie inside and out. So I'm so excited to talk about every element of it. Incredible. It's also a lot of elements in this movie have happened to me. I've lived with my grandmother with my family. Mm-hmm. I have been in the choir at church. My mom is currently in many choirs at church. And church culture was a big part of my growing up. I grew up in a really small church. So this is a really fond movie for me.
Nice. And Natasha, how about you?
Yeah, damn, I didn't know that, Justine. This is like,
it
movie, damn.
Documentary.
Yes. Oh, I'm learning something.
Preacher's Life is a documentary.
Right. Starring Justine. I have not watched this in a couple Christmases. It hasn't been in my usual repertoire. I don't know why. We listened to the album for sure, Christmas morning, cooking breakfast usually. But yeah, it's been a minute since I watched the movie. So it was definitely like a walk down memory lane a little bit, remembering the story. But I loved it. I mean, you can't beat Denzel, Whitney. I mean, the ensemble cast, just everybody.
Yeah, this cast is crazy.
The music is crazy. The story is, you know, magical. And yeah, definitely very nostalgic. I also grew up in the church. And yeah, just watching those elements, just very familiar. And yeah, it'd been a while, but I'm excited to talk about it with like very fresh eyes.
Nice. Jamie, how about you?
I'd seen this movie a couple of times before. I was really into basic cable holiday movie marathons, Halloween marathons, whatever it was. If it was showing on TNT around a holiday, TNT. I saw it with 5,000 commercial breaks, which is also how I watched it on Tubi to prepare for this episode.
Oh my, God. So many commercials on Tubi.
Okay. As long as we've all had, I was like, wow, okay, I'll buy laundry pods. My God. I'd seen it growing up several times. I would also say, like Natasha, I grew up more with the soundtrack than the movie itself.
Okay.
But I'd seen it many times. The soundtrack is very Christmas Eve, Christmas morning, nostalgic. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I remember knowing about this movie the strongest was my mom was really into the fact that Whitney Houston's mom was in this movie as well.
Yeah,
and so she was, I think, just mom solidarity, don't really know. But
definitely,
she was like, that's Whitney Houston's mom.
That's her real mom?
I didn't realize that.
Well, not playing her mom.
Not playing her mom.
No, not her.
She's in it, though. She's on the cameo. Okay. Like a cameo.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I missed that. Love that.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's the exchange where it's the woman who stops her and is like, are you sure that you want to like split the choir parts like that?
Okay.
And Whitney is like, yes. And then she's like, did you like that? You know, because she's
it
was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. I ended up falling down a rabbit hole of learning about Whitney Houston's mom, who is also a very accomplished
singer.
I just didn't know. Anyways, seen it a couple of times, was really delighted to revisit it. And I think that there's something to really be said for like a wholesome yet somewhat horny Christmas movie. And this really delivers. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, what's your history?
Well, I have never seen the movie before prepping for this episode. So the whole spectrum is represented between someone who knows this movie inside and out and someone who had never seen it. So listeners may know that I'm the Grinch of the podcast. I am not really into Christmas spirit. I don't have any.
I'm the Grinch's dog.
So I don't seek out Christmassy movies very much, unless it's Muppet Christmas Carol, and then I will watch that every year.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, okay. So I had never seen this movie, and I don't know what I was expecting, but it was not a horny angel lusting after Whitney Houston and her lusting right back, mm-hmm. and then Courtney B. Vance being like, hello, can you not? And that's basically the movie.
It's a lot to talk about. A lot to talk about.
Yeah, yes. So I'm excited to discuss. Should we just get into the recap?
Let's do it.
All right.
Sounds good.
Actually, let's take a quick break and then we'll come right back.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knix Anniversary Sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knix Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knix.com. That's KNIX.com.
Okay, so we open with voiceover from a little kid named Jeremiah saying that this story he's about to tell is true, even though no one believes him.
Mm-hmm. So many like wholesome family movies are narrated by little boys specifically.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, let's spread the love around. I feel like we've covered several movies this year that begins with like, "Hi, I'm a little guy. You won't believe what happened."
It reminded me of a recent movie we've covered, Soul Food.
Soul Food.
Oh yeah. Also narrated by the little guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do love a child narrator though. They're the most trustworthy, the most honest.
And you only see them every 20 minutes or so. Yeah. And you're like, oh yeah.
Pops in, gives around. A reflection. Yeah.
Yeah. Says something profound. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a week from Christmas. We are in a church. We meet Jeremiah's mom and dad. So that is Julia Biggs, played by Whitney Houston. There's probably a more correct term for this, but I wrote down, she's the lead singer of the church choir.
The Beyonce of the choir, yes. The Whitney, the Whitney Houston of the choir.
The Whitney Houston of the choir.
The choir director probably would be
okay, got it.
Job title.
Nice. And then her husband, Henry Biggs, played by Courtney B. Vance, he's the reverend at this church called St. Matthew's. And he's giving a sermon about temptation. And we're like, foreshadowing much?
Mm-hmm. Very different movie, but it weirdly, because I kind of forgot how horny this movie was. But there's also like another like trope of movies that take place in church. It always starts with like an ominous foreshadowing pulpit talk. Mm-hmm. The same thing happens in Doubt. Very different.
Oh my
movie.
God.
It also starts with like, so here's the theme of Doubt.
That's true.
Oh, anyways, different movies.
Different movie. Also, one of my favorites, though. I love Doubt.
Love Doubt. Yeah.
Jamie's a big Doubt head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we also meet Julia's mom, Marguerite, played by Jennifer Lewis. Mm-hmm. And things are not going great at the church. They are not pulling in many donations. They have to close the youth center. Henry just feels like he's not doing much good for the community. And so he prays to God to send him some help. And then out of the sky falls Dudley. That's Denzel Washington. And Dudley is thrilled about being there. He's jumping around. He's dancing. And we're like, what's going on here?
He scares the children.
Yeah. He does scare them away. Can I just say one thing about the amount of black icons that we see in the first 10 minutes of this film? We see Loretta Devine, Jennifer Lewis, Paul Bates, and Sherry Headley, a.k.a. Lisa McDowell, the icon. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to say how many black icons, especially at that time, I want to say between like 89 and 97, those were like really, really standout black actors. Yeah.
And then more will show up because then like Lionel Richie has a cameo. Right.
Lionel Richie was a jump scare.
Yeah,
like, he was. He was good. Like he did well.
Yeah.
Okay. So Dudley has fallen out of the sky and he approaches Reverend Henry, and he's like, hey, I'm here on behalf of God, and I'm here to answer your request. But Henry doesn't believe him. He thinks it's some kind of joke, and he drives off. So Dudley's like, okay, I guess I'll try a different approach. Then a young black man named Billy gets arrested because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's racially profiled, so he gets put in jail. Henry goes to the police station to try to help, but he can't really do anything about it. And then Henry's car won't start. And Dudley shows up again. And then Henry's car magically starts. And Dudley's like, yeah, I did that. Because once again, I'm an angel. And then he explains that he, you know, used to be a human on Earth. His time was cut short. He went to heaven. He became an angel. And he's just been waiting for a chance to come back to Earth and help and do good.
Everyone's reception of an angel in this movie is on a scale of like, it makes sense how Courtney B. Vance reacts to him because he's like, I just don't believe you. This is all in a day's work to me to like, you know, passively accept what someone is saying. Mm. But later on, it's like, seems like other people fully believe he's an angel and they're like, yeah, there's this angel who's hanging out with us now.
Yeah, like, it's Christmas.
Yeah. I guess it's the week before Christmas.
But everyone thinks that he was just like sent by the church council to help. I don't think anyone else realizes he's an angel. They're just like, he's a guy. He's a nice guy. He's hot.
But Whitney does. And Whitney's like, okay.
Let's go with
like
it.
She's very, I'm used to like anytime there's like a supernatural occurrence, there has to be a scream. There has to be a Freaky Friday moment. Mm. But everyone's just sort of like, wow, this is wild. Merry Christmas to all.
I also love Dudley's like imagery of like these angels in a waiting room in heaven, just like waiting to get sent down. I'm just like, how does it work? What's the process here? Even he seems like excited, like, oh, I made it. My number was called. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, and then based on his clothes, I would guess he died in like the 50s.
I was going to say 19.
And because he's wearing like a fedora and like, you know, the overcoat that like men always wore in that era. And so I'm like, okay, he's been waiting for like 40 or 45 years or so to be sent back down to Earth. And he doesn't know what like Windows is. He's like, what? How do, what is computer? So I'm like, okay, he's from a different era and he's been waiting for decades. Yeah,
when was pizza popular? Because he freaks out over the pizza and the hot dog. So I don't know when those, I have to be better about my food history. I got to research this after.
The origin of the pizza slice.
Yeah.
Jamie, write a book about it.
Sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dudley is with Henry, and he also outlines the rules of being an angel and helping people on Earth, which are that angels can't do anything that people should be doing, that everything that like a person that an angel helps out does has to be of their own free will. And finally, when an angel has accomplished his mission and leaves, then the person he was helping, in this case Henry, won't have any memory of the angel anymore.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like such a bummer job.
I know. Mm-hmm.
He makes being an angel sound like a lot of paper pushing and then and like a lot of waiting around, and then it's like, and then you get to do something amazing. And maybe you'll even fall in love, but you can never have sex. And then no one remembers you and you have to go back to the waiting room.
That's a thankless job.
You should be able to have sex if you can't remember. Come on. That just seems unfair.
That's true. That's true. Except Jeremiah will remember for some reason.
Yeah, damn.
He's like, no, Mom, I swear to God, you had sex with Denzel Washington. I'm not kidding.
Poor Jeremiah. The trauma. No one's going to believe that. Yeah. This is too much.
I know. Yeah, there's a very different tonal sequel to this movie where Jeremiah's in therapy years later being like, I know that this happened, but no one will acknowledge Denzel Washington's presence in my life one week.
He's like haunted by the memory of Denzel. Oh, God.
Okay, so then as Dudley is saying goodbye to Henry, they shake hands. And then there's like this surge of warm energy between them, and Henry's like, oh my God, what was that? And there's music and it's going like ding ling ling ling.
Does it remind you guys of the Broad City Whoosh?
Ooh. I didn't connect that on my own, but yeah, it totally does.
When the wind is knocked out of her.
Yeah.
We love the Broad City Whoosh. We actually reference it all the time.
That's one of my favorite episodes. Yes. It hits you. The wind knocked out of you.
Which is what happens to Henry. He's like, oh my God. Yeah. But then he's like, actually, I don't feel anything and I still don't believe you. Bye. Now, meanwhile, things are falling apart. The church boiler explodes. Mm-hmm. Jeremiah's best friend, Hakim, is taken away to be put in foster care. Billy has to stay in jail because his bail is too high for his friends or family to be able to pay it. And then also things between Henry and his wife, Julia, are not great. He is too busy with a lot of these church matters to have much time for her. And Julia's mother, Marguerite, notices and she's like, get your house back together.
Yeah, Marguerite really is like, hey, get over it. My husband also neglected me for the same job. And you're like, well, can you at least commiserate, guys? Hey.
So then Dudley shows up again being like, actually, I'm the Reverend's new assistant. The church council sent me. And Henry's secretary, Beverly, played by Loretta Devine, thinks she's being fired and replaced. And Dudley's like, no, I'm just here to... It's an amazing scene. She's so funny.
Loretta's so good for that. She's so good at that, like, kind of monologue.
Mm-hmm. And playing, like, an anxious character. Like, yes! She does that so well.
For sure. Have you guys seen her on Watch What Happens Live?
No.
She's one of my all-time favorite guests. I watched her have this live. She went crazy.
Oh, God.
She got so drunk.
Really?
Drunk.
Oh, yes. That show is like chaotic evil.
Chaos already. No, I want to be a bartender so bad. Yes. So bad.
Andy, if you're listening, please, me and Natasha any day.
Yes, slide us in. But yes, Loretta Devine on Watch What Happens Live is a very good episode. Okay. If you want to hear some gossip.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I will watch it. Okay, so Dudley's like, no, I'm just here to help. And then Julia and Marguerite are like, sounds good to me, especially because you're hot and sexy, so we don't mind having you around.
Basically.
And then Dudley hangs out with Jeremiah and confronts him because Jeremiah is sad that Hakeem has just left. Then Henry has a meeting with this guy named Joe Hamilton, played by Gregory Hines. He's a real estate developer who wants to build like basically a mega church, and he wants Henry to be the reverend there.
Also like another like 80s, 90s trope of like a land developer as the main antagonist of the movie. We should bring that back.
I mean,
where did that go?
Now more than ever. Yeah, let's villainize landlords.
Yeah.
So Henry reluctantly accepts Joe's offer, and then when Henry tells Julia about it, she's furious that Henry didn't consult her and that he sold out. And also her father used to be the reverend at St. Matthew's, so she feels like extra attachment to it, and she feels like she doesn't want the church to be abandoned or like her presence, her family's presence in the church to go away.
That to me was a wild moment, him selling the church that belonged to his wife's father like out from underneath her without even consulting. It's like, is this real life?
Right.
How are you gonna live past this?
And she's only allowed to be upset about it for like a scene.
Yeah.
And then her mom's like, well, get over it. You're like, shouldn't you be mad too? That's like,
right.
You have a huge attachment to this church.
Yeah. Yes. It's like grounds for a divorce, but it was kind of swept under like it was nothing.
This movie was written by men.
Yeah. I think that's when the audience starts turning and being like, you know what? Maybe you can't fuck with Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no,
maybe you should.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Julia and Dudley.
Yeah, all day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a scene where I was like, oh, this movie was written by two men. If they're like, well, they'll discuss the fact that this happened, but also, you know, ultimately they have to accept their decision.
Okay, so Dudley, meanwhile, he's concerned about Henry and Julia's marriage. So he's like, Julia, all you need to do is just go dancing together and reignite that spark. But Henry is too busy to go. So he's like, Dudley, you take her dancing. So Julia,
could you imagine handing off your woman to Denzel Washington?
And I mean,
like, let's go to jazz night.
Right. What? In her little black dress.
You know?
Oh my gosh. And she, when she's walking down the stairs and Dudley's like, hubba hubba awooga.
It's so like, I feel like that's the power of Denzel Washington, where it's like, it's not necessarily a horny shot, but he makes it a horny shot.
And you're just like, the eyes. I know. And it might be a little bit of projection. No, like you are horny watching Denzel. So perhaps maybe.
Yeah.
Or horny watching Whitney. It's
or horny watching Whitney, even if her wig is
shiny. Very attractive people.
Yeah.
That wig was plastic.
It was crazy, the wig. Crazy. But it's fine.
So shiny.
Okay, so then Julia and Dudley go dancing. Lionel Richie's there. And he's like, Julia, you should sing the way you used to when you came here, because this movie uses any excuse to have Whitney Houston sing. It happens so many times.
I think it's actually really important, though.
Yeah,
I want to talk about it towards the end, but I think it is important that Whitney... Mm. Well, it's important, and also I'm sure it was a demand.
Like, I will be in this movie if I can sing in... Every 12 scenes. Okay, so she sings... Dudley is like, woohoo, good job. And they ultimately just like have a very nice time at the jazz club. They come home. Henry
but there's
is
a vibe.
Jealous.
But there's a vibe.
I mean,
there's definitely a vibe.
Hard.
Yes. Heavy.
So much so that when they come home, Henry is very jealous. And he's like, I don't believe this. And Dudley's like, well, that's your problem. You don't believe anything anymore. You're compromising your values. You're ignoring your wife. And you haven't even done anything about your son losing his best friend. And you don't even believe that Billy is innocent. So Henry's like, maybe he's right. So Henry goes to the courthouse and gives an impassioned speech to the judge. Next thing we know, Billy is free and home. Then there's a scene where Julia and Dudley are ice skating. And
Julia and Dudley are on a date.
They are like on a date.
Holy.
And if you're so on a date that she is like, Jeremiah, get out of here.
Yeah, go get even Jeremiah date. Was side-eyeing them.
Yeah, Jeremiah
on the bench looking like something's not right here.
Why is my mom on a date?
He like knew that he was the third wheel, so he's like, I need to sit down. I need to go over here, drink my cocoa. And then like Julia and Dudley, if you thought they were vibing before, now they are vibing. And this romantic music heavy. Is playing. And we're like, is she going to have sex with an angel? What is happening?
The thrill through my 7-year-old body if I found out that they were going to have an affair at the local Hilton. Oh, my God. Y'all don't even know. Oh, my God. Do you all, me and Natasha just had an episode about this, reviewing some holiday movies that'll come out the end of November. But we talked about how there's not a whole lot of, like, on-screen chemistry the way that they're used to be in films with couples, like Whitney and Denzel have such a fair secrecy chemistry, and Whitney and Courtney have such husband wife married 30 years live with your mama chemistry.
Yeah.
Oh, the chemistry is impeccable in this film, I think.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. I feel the same way about a lot. It feels like there's more of like an algorithmic nature to casting now, and it's like not considered like okay, who are two people with like huge followings that like aren't the same audience as them?
Yeah.
Just be like, they're in love. True. And it's like, usually it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they do chemistry tests anymore. Figuring out who they should cast.
You're totally, they have such discreet affair.
Oh my God. Specific energy.
Discretion.
And you know who else can tell is Julia's mom, Marguerite. Mm-hmm. They come home from ice skating and she all but like screams, and she's like, you cannot have sex with Dudley, you're married to Henry. And then also Henry sees all the chemistry they have, and he's like, Dudley, stay away from my wife and leave right now. So then there's a scene where Julia and Henry are taking Christmas baskets to people, and Julia calls him out for being jealous, and he's like, I'm not jealous. Meanwhile, Dudley is lurking nearby, and he uses his angel powers to blow Henry over. So he falls in the snow, and then Julia comes over, and Dudley blows her over next to Henry, because in an earlier scene, she had told Dudley a story about how when they were kids, she and Dudley fell in the snow together, and that's how they like knew they were going to get married someday or something. And so now they're in the snow again, and they're vibing. They're kind of reconnecting as husband and wife. And then other things start to get better too. The church has a new boiler. Henry has arranged to bring Hakeem back to stay with them over the holidays. And then Henry goes to Joe Hamilton, that real estate guy, to be like, never mind, I'm not going to be a sellout in your mega church. And Joe is like, oh, yeah, well, I bought the mortgage and I'm going to tear your church down. And so suddenly the stakes are so high. And then Dudley goes to see Joe Hamilton, and he's basically like, I'm an angel. And if you tear down this church, I will see to it that you go straight to hell.
Oh my God. They have the piano that they have at the Magic Castle. Oh, and you're like, oh, wow, yes. Really impressive. Really cool, God.
Oh my God.
It's so Christmas movie.
Yeah. Yes. I love the little subtle random ways that they like wield magic and like the power of God, like playing the piano. Like, why that moment?
Yeah, right. Turning on a radio, you know, really powerful stuff.
He's like, wait, that not even plugged in. You're like, yeah, Gregory Hines. That's God. Is real. That's God.
Okay, so I think it's Christmas Day now. Dudley comes to the church to say goodbye to Julia, saying it's time for him to leave. And then Henry gives this big Christmas sermon in which he was planning to tell everyone that the church is going to be torn down, but then he goes off script and gives a passionate sermon about hope and love and forgiveness and how an angel helped him and they're going to save the church. And everyone's like, woo. And Dudley's like, oh, he finally believes in me. And then Julia sings some more because Whitney Houston put in her contract that she has to sing a million songs. And then Joe Hamilton is like, never mind. I won't tear down your church. And so all is well, which means that Dudley's angel mission is accomplished, which also means that Henry and Julia forget.
He has to go back to what sounds like purgatory. It sounds like he works in purgatory.
He works at a call center. Yeah.
It literally sounds like no exit. Like, it sounds scary.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's heaven.
Right. Because Dudley accomplished his mission, Henry and Julia forget Dudley now. They don't recognize him. It's like they never met him, but Jeremiah still does. And then the movie ends with the family together and happy. They adopt Hakeem, and now Dudley is the angel tree topper on their Christmas tree. The end.
Yay. Yay. So, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back to discuss.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knix Anniversary Sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knix Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knix.com. That's KNIX.com.
And we're back.
But what if all you wanted for Christmas was to have sex with Angel Denzel Washington? How does that work? How does that square?
Yeah, Julia does not get her wish, her Christmas wish.
But at least she'll never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shall we start with some context corner?
Yes. Yeah. So this movie is an adaptation, we already said, for a movie from the 40s that none of us have ever seen and probably never will, because this one is good. Directed by Penny Marshall, obviously a very iconic director. I'm trying to think of, we've covered several of her movies on this show before. We recently covered Big, we've covered A League of Their Own, and now this movie. As it is written by, I think that this movie is an interesting case, questionable case of a lot of high up white creatives with an all black cast, because the screenplay is written by two white guys. However, Denzel Washington was the major production force in getting this movie made. It was produced through his production company, Mundy Lane Entertainment. And at the time, he gave an interview about sort of the importance and his commitment to having an all-black cast in this movie. Although he did consider having Julia Roberts in the main part at one point.
Yes.
What?
And then was like, never mind, Whitney Houston.
Oh my God, that would have changed the whole movie. That would have changed everything.
Yeah. No Jennifer Lewis, unless Julia was like adopted or something.
Also, Jennifer Lewis is only 6 years older than Whitney Houston.
I was going to say, she does not give Whitney Houston's mom at all.
Yeah. I kept forgetting that they were sisters. But okay, so Denzel Washington said this at the time, just about his company in general. I'm happy to know that on a film like Devil in a Blue Dress, we put 100 or so many black people to work, and it was the same thing with The Preacher's Wife. And it will be the same thing with other films that I'm involved in, whether I'm on a producer level or not. We do it because they're capable and because nobody else is necessarily looking out for them, speaking about black actors and black creatives in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. I love knowing that. I didn't realize that Denzel was... I mean, I saw that Penny Marshall had directed it, but it was Denzel's production company behind it, which...
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
That feels good. Also, I think we can get into it, but like the representation of the church and the black family, and I think it felt very authentic, so it makes sense that there were black creatives behind the scene that helped make it, you know, bring justice to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we stan Penny Marshall, but I was like... Why her directing it? Although, like, apparently Denzel Washington, like, sought her out specifically and was like, you need to direct this movie, please. And she originally turned it down because she didn't think the script was very good, but then it got rewritten and then she came on board. Okay. Denzel also approached Whitney Houston and was like, you have to be in this movie. And she said, okay. But I did a little bit of research on the novel that it was based on, which, you know, it's not the most relevant thing, except to say that it ends very, very differently from both the movie adaptation from the 40s and The Preacher's Wife.
She does have sex with Denzel Washington.
Yes, please tell me that shit.
It's closer to that. It's not quite that, but it is closer to it. So the way the book ends is that the angel, who in this case is named Michael, he realizes or he learns that he, as an angel, can't fulfill quote unquote mortal love because it's not related to divine intervention. So he can't have sex, basically, because it would be inappropriate and it's not divine enough or something.
Whoa.
And
very philosophical. Okay. Wow.
So he returns to heaven after helping the bishop character. And then Julia realizes that she will never have a passionate relationship with her husband. She then decides to have another child to share her love with, since she knows she won't get that love from her husband.
Oh, God.
Weirdo.
That got dark.
That is so weird.
Ooh.
And when I was also looking up this book, I couldn't find a whole lot of information about it, but it's also listed as like satire. I think it might be okay. more satirical than both movie adaptations, which I think are far more earnest.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes more sense. Still weird.
Still weird.
Still weird, but also explains yeah. Hakim's character.
Yes.
Oh, he was that other child.
Could be.
Yeah. That's a good point, because when I ended the movie, I didn't really feel that hopeful for Whitney. I mean, I know the music is going and everyone's smiling and it's Christmas, but like, okay, the church is still going to be around. That's great. But he's still busy as hell. Like, that was the real issue with Henry. Like, he's never home. So is that problem solved? Like, we don't get any resolve on that. So,
yeah, I felt the same way. Like, she's pretty much back to one at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm.
Especially yeah. because Henry's assistant, Loretta Devine, is like, remember that part at the end where that character Saul is like, I'm going to marry you. Mm-hmm. And Reverend, you're going to have to find a new secretary, implying that like she yeah. won't work anymore now that she's yeah. married.
Yeah, she's married.
Oh, God. Now Julia's going to get sucked into like- it.
Yeah. So he's going to be even more busy. I mean, maybe he'll hire another like assistant or secretary, but yeah, it ended a little bizarrely to me.
Yeah.
And then another thing I wanted to point out about kind of the development of this movie is that an earlier version of the script had Julia being quite underdeveloped. So according to an interview with Whitney Houston, she says, Julia was a little sterile, and I thought she needs to be more realistic. She needs to get a little mad sometimes because she's being put off a lot. She needs expression. She needs to be able to express herself, and she needs a job. She needs something to do, as opposed to the bishop's wife, where she was just the bishop's wife. Mm-hmm. So I think she pushed for a more developed character in Julia with rewrites, although I would argue that like they could have done a bit more to develop her, because at least for me, like the Julia character mostly exists as like the object of two men's affection more than mm-hmm. like a fully realized, fleshed out
yeah.
character who is like allowed to make active choices and mm-hmm. do anything that steers the direction of the story. And I think like Whitney Houston being that character, like maybe tricks people into thinking she's a more dynamic and interesting character than she actually is. But like, I kept being like, yeah, this movie's called The Preacher's Wife. So I expected it to be more about her doing things.
Right. Mm-hmm. But she's kind of like just, I mean, I saw that quote as well. And I was like, wow, it sucks that Whitney Houston had to push to get what felt like not
yeah. even this
very much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think just in general, like this is like, I don't know if this character is a complete example of this, but I feel like there's very often when there's like a woman at the center of a story, especially if she is a wife and a mother, like she's written in this kind of sterile way. And mm-hmm. like, she's only allowed to have an inner life up to a very particular point. And then at a point where it would actually become a threat or like too much about her, it scales back. Cause the script takes great care to say like, she is an excellent wife and mother. Mm-hmm. Like that point is mm-hmm. hit on repeatedly, and that she loves her husband, even though I'm like, but we can feel the vibe in this scene, but okay. You know, I don't know. Or like the scenes between her and her mother feel like they're mostly there to reinforce her goodness, even though it's usually her mom yelling at her about mm-hmm, potentially, mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of struggled with how kind of underdeveloped she felt. I'm like, just let her have like a crisis about her marriage. Like it doesn't make mm-hmm. her a bad person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her focus on her mother's focus is on like the keeping the household together, meaning their marriage. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's not really allowed to have like an outer life. I guess she gets this little dalliance with Dudley, but mm-hmm. I think it was yeah, interesting how Henry, his focus is so external mm-hmm. and it's fine, but it seems as if the issues within their household, like the success of it being solved, relies on Julia.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
his first business is the church and getting that together. And Julia needs to work harder to get his attention back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically, yeah, what her focus can only be. And as soon as she starts something with Dudley,
it eventually gets halted pretty quickly.
Right.
Yeah. I will say her involvement and position at the church is a pretty common one. Most of the times the preacher's wife is the head of the music at the church. Mm-hmm. And her being Whitney Houston obviously gives it a leg up. But also this is, according to Wikipedia, the best-selling gospel album of all time is the soundtrack to this film. Which is not surprising because it is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what it also does for Julia is it kind of gives her kind of like a sister act kind of storyline of like, I have this talented choir just waiting for stardom. Like, it gives her that kind of leadership position, but it's still at her husband's church.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still kind of underneath her husband's kind of wing or shadow. But what it does do is give her a leadership position and a place where she can like really stand out in this film.
Which apparently she had to fight for. Again, she's like,
yeah,
she's like, can my character do, can she have a job?
Do anything?
Do anything? Yeah. Can I sell these records? Like, you know I can. Like, hello?
Right.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was a really, it's a part of the film that I never thought about, of how important the soundtrack is to the development of Julia's character.
Mm-hmm, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Justine, because this movie is a documentary. How did you feel about how the church was represented and portrayed within the movie?
So perfectly. So perfectly. That's why it does not surprise me. Even though I didn't know it, that Denzel Washington's production company was behind this, because I went to a church where it was really small. There was no air conditioning, but it was a stop on the Underground Railroad. So there was like a historic aspect to the church. It's been around since like 1856, I think.
Wow.
But it's like so small. The people who run it are all 70 plus. And the choir is like phenomenal. And they made most of their donations and money through Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very accurate portrayal.
And then I thought it was cool that the Georgia Mass Choir is like the main, like it's like a professional, huge, successful choir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was going to add another, I think, really authentic aspect of the church in the movie is like the struggling Black church.
Yep.
I feel like every church I've been to, there's like a building fund, there's like a fundraiser for something, something's broken, somebody's son needs the down payment for, you know, a new house, or needs the deposit for school, and the whole community is rallying around. So I thought that was very, very true to form when I think it's Billy. They have to get the bail money for Billy, and like how involved Henry was, how involved everybody was. That is, I mean, that's so authentic to just like the community feel of church. Even the moment where the youth center got closed, and how like devastating that was just for the kids, because oftentimes the church is, that's the hangout spot.
Not
even during Sundays, like maybe during the week, Wednesdays, you know, your mom's going to Bible study and then you're just like hanging out with everybody else, you know, downstairs at the youth center. So yeah, I thought that was very, very authentic. Just those little tiny moments made it very much like, okay, this is, we're in a for real Black church. It's not just a movie. This feels like real. Yeah.
That's something I really liked about the movie, is that it presents this notion of like, just because it's Christmas time doesn't mean that all of these like issues that affect a community go away. The way that so many Christmas movies are like, wow, it's the most magical time of year. It's cookies and gingerbread men and sugar and cocoa, and everything's amazing and everything's so beautiful. And that's because so many movies center upper middle class white characters or families in like predominantly white suburbs, or they'll be in like castles or an estate, something like that. And I just appreciate that this movie centers a Black family and Black community. And, you know, it depicts a lot of things that affect this community. You know, the struggle of a lot of these characters being in a poorer class, a character being racially profiled and arrested just days before Christmas. Like, these things unfortunately do happen. And the movie's like, yeah, these things don't stop happening just because it's December 20th or something.
Yeah, I never thought about that. It's a good point.
And it's still like it presents all these very real, authentic issues, and also still is a very like joyful movie and has like a very hopeful message, which I feel like is a difficult needle to kind of thread that this movie does mm-hmm. really well.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I feel like sometimes, yeah, it could be a very thin line with like a movie that's trying to show like social issues or like mm-hmm. the plight of, you know, black poverty or whatever. Like it could get, you know, dark and sad, and mm-hmm. the way that they're able to maintain like humor and magic and mm-hmm. romance mm-hmm. is actually really impressive.
It is. Yeah. You need all those characters. You need the guy who drives the church van. Mm-hmm. You need the like nice lady who's a lawyer who goes to church. Like you need all those people in order to insert all that humor mm-hmm. and levity mm-hmm. into these yeah. situations, because they bring it in real life.
Yeah, you need Loretta Devine yeah. to be there.
You have to have Loretta Devine.
Yeah. Yes.
I wish that we had more Loretta Devine. I mean, she's there mainly for like the comic relief through line of like she thinks that Denzel Washington is trying to displace her mm-hmm. when he's working for his job is, I think, much worse than anyone else's in the movie. It sounds like he lives in hell, kind of.
Do you see how excited he was when he was eating pizza? He's like, oh my God, I haven't had food in 40 years.
Like, does God not let you eat?
They're torturing them up there.
What? I thought it was supposed to be paradise. I thought you could get whatever you want, whenever you wanted, however right. you wanted it to be made. Right. What?
God's like feeding them astronaut food. They're like, add water.
Astronaut food, yeah.
Basically meatloaf. Add water. Oh, anyways, but I wish that we had more Loretta Devine. We do learn a little bit about her character. We know that she's a single mom, but I just felt like we talk about on the show all the time, there were opportunities and characters and obviously like unbelievable actors that like, why wouldn't she take advantage of an opportunity to show Loretta Devine and Whitney Houston like acting together more? Because also this came out the year after Waiting to Exhale. You're like,
oh my
dude,
God,
that's know that right. their chemistry is off the yeah. charts. Like, write yeah. a more meaningful friendship for them. Because it's like, yeah. if you cast Loretta Devine, I mean, obviously every second she's on screen is amazing. It's again, it's very like two guys wrote this movie that Denzel Washington's Christmas gift to her is a boyfriend. But it was sweet. I liked it. Like, I just felt like there was so much more potential for that character, especially mm-hmm. because we already know that she and Whitney Houston have like unbelievable chemistry because of a mm-hmm. huge movie that came out the year before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a good point. They mm-hmm. very much underutilized her. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think another thing in the movie, there was a lot of little subplots, not all necessary. Love Loretta, mm-hmm. love to see her, but that was like a random subplot. I agree. Like Whitney really only talks with her mother. Yeah. Or confides yeah. in her mother, mm-hmm. I guess a little bit in Dudley, but yeah, I don't know why they didn't give her like an out or have some other aside.
A friendship, a female friendship.
Even. And how yeah. scandalous would it have been if it was her husband's assistant? That would have been fabulous.
Right.
Yeah, add another subplot to all yeah. the subplots. Yeah. Because yeah.
Loretta Devine has like whatever. Information about him that she, like, that's yeah. that's an important friendship.
Yes, yeah. exactly. He knows his yeah. schedule. That's how she could sneak around with the dates with Dudley. She could have gone on more dates. Like, we could have really made this happen.
They started new Googled calendar for infidelity. That makes me so happy. Yeah, and I think like I liked that. I mean, yeah, I guess that Julia and Dudley are friends. They're friends, but also they're friends.
They're
yeah,
more than friends.
Mm-hmm, they're mm-hmm. winking at each other. They're flirting.
I guess this is like my last thought on Julia's character is that I think it's interesting that they give her, and I'm pretty sure this detail was added when Whitney Houston was cast to justify her singing more of like, oh, she used to really like singing at this club, but now she only sings at the church, but mm-hmm. she still misses singing at the club and really enjoyed it. And Lionel mm-hmm. Richie wishes that she was there more. Just like a cool yeah. detail. I really liked that scene, but I feel like it like introduces like one of those subplots that like she mm-hmm. is looking for fulfillment outside the church and looking for like validation of her singing outside the church, mm-hmm. but she doesn't get that. And everyone close to her, especially, I mean, definitely her husband, but also Dudley and her mom kind of like reinforced to her, like, you should be happy with what you have. Like that mm-hmm. Dudley literally says that to her. He's saying like, everything you ever wanted, you already have. And it's like, well, I'm pretty sure several scenes ago, she told you that's not true. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I found it like in the way that, again, like the wife and mother box of like, you're lucky to mm-hmm. be in the yeah. place that you are, and it would be selfish to want more or different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's important too that in that scene at the club, she's singing a secular song. She's not singing a song about God.
Yeah.
That is really important to the film. And that's, yeah. Wow. I never really even realized how like instrumental that one scene is to giving us a little tease into who she was before. But that's true. And I always, my whole family is always like, she's not singing about God in this. She's singing about her and Dudley. This is scandalous and crazy.
But it's such a good song.
Yeah. I love that song.
I think that Henry kind of gets let off the hook a little too easily because, like, I understand that he is a very important member of this community. A lot of people look to him for guidance and for assistance and all this for kind sure. of stuff. So he's very, you know, busy running around. But he is like pretty actively neglecting his relationship with his partner. And like we said, like Marguerite is always on Julia's case about it. She's never on Henry's case to be like,
even though she doesn't like him.
Yeah.
Which is where I was like, why are you defending him so hard when you seem to actively dislike him?
Right. Yeah. And she's like, well, you know, my husband was the same way and that's just how it is. And it's like,
did you hate him too? Like, you don't have to be nice to him.
But yeah, Marguerite's always being like, Julia, the responsibility is on you to like maintain this household and keep this family together. But like, seems like she's doing all she can. Meanwhile, Henry, you know, he's doing his responsibilities around the community, but he also doesn't seem to be fully acknowledging that it's taking a toll on his marriage. And there's a scene where, like, I think they're eating breakfast together and he's like being snippy and he says something like, if you were listening more closely, you would have heard an apology in there, but now I have to go to a meeting. And it's like, well, you actually didn't apologize, which is why no one heard it.
Like, yeah, what?
And then he like gets so, and like, I get it. He's like very threatened by Dudley.
Understandable.
It's Denzel Washington. He's very handsome and he's also actively seducing his wife. But he doesn't seem to take much accountability for their relationship. And I think by the end, he still doesn't fully recognize like, oh, I need to be a more present partner in this relationship. And good thing that I don't know who Dudley is anymore, or else I would still probably be really jealous.
Yeah, I think that's what's really missing from the movie is like a full circle moment for Henry acknowledging like a full accountability moment.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of ended being like, I don't really have much hope for them. Yeah. Like the church isn't sold, yay, but like your marriage is still in the gutter. Right. And I think also, yeah, Henry is, he gets off very easily. Mm-hmm. He's not only neglectful of his wife, but even his son's best friend got sent to foster care. Like no conversation between the two of them. He keeps missing moments and appointments with his son, and like you don't see Marguerite saying anything about that. Like it's really very much focused on the marriage. And you know, poor little Jeremiah is like sitting back witnessing all of this and getting the brunt of it in his own way by not having his dad present.
For sure.
And then has to remember all of it and no one else does.
Ugh, he's the only one with the trauma. Oh my God.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not convinced at the end of the movie that he's necessarily going to treat her better.
Right.
Now that everything's done. And also, that doesn't make the work he's doing in his community any less important, any less impactful, any less taxing on your energy. But it feels like a very low bar to be like, okay, so he's not going to sell her family's church to a land developer. You're like, why that's that a really low bar. Yeah, that shouldn't have been on the table.
Yeah, to not sell the church that was handed to you by your wife's family. Yeah, that's true.
Man.
Joe Hamilton, by the way, speaking of this land developer guy, I was like, Joe Hamilton, because Black people can be blood-sucking real estate sharks, too. Interesting casting.
Yep. Also, another iconic Black actor. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Yeah, for sure.
That is interesting, the choice of making the like real estate vulture guy
a black guy. Yeah.
And he's from the community too, right? He seems very familiar with everybody.
Seems like yeah. Yep.
I wonder how that is done in the, again, like we didn't watch the original or read the original book. Right. I wonder if that is like a one-to-one thing from the original. Don't know.
Yeah.
The movie, and I think the book, focuses more on the bishop. Bishop Henry is trying to raise money to build a huge cathedral for his overcrowded parish. So it's actually the bishop's idea to be like, let's build a huge church rather than an outside like real estate developer coming in and trying to bring the bishop onto the mega church. Yeah, so that's a story change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if there is a real estate developer character in the original source material. Anyway.
Again, a very 90s choice. Like I always think of that was a main plot point in Casper. That was a main plot point in like so many. They're like, save the building.
The Hannah Montana movie.
Save the building.
Save the building. And it's like, I mean, in the case of this movie, in the case of all those movies, yeah, they had to save the building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the stakes, they're high.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about Julia and Marguerite's relation. Actually, I don't know. I feel like we maybe covered it.
I do want to add, though, like, I love Jennifer Lewis. Mm-hmm. She has played so many mothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So many black films.
I love her character.
She's terrible, but also great.
Yeah.
She's always like, I don't like to get into other people's business. And all she does is get into other people's business.
Everybody's business.
All up in the business.
Yep.
Smoking her cigarette in the house with a child walking around. Like, terrible.
God bless. It's great. I still am like, brutal that they cast her as Whitney's mom when she is, I can't say it enough, a mere 6 years older. Ridiculous. Yes. Whitney. She was born in 57. Whitney was born in 63. That does happen every once in a while. I feel like that was a big thing people talk about with Golden Girls all the time too.
Oh yeah.
Is that like the mother daughter were unbelievably close in age and you're like, oh, you're kind of roasting this other actor for no reason. But anyways, yeah, no, Jennifer Lewis, it's like, I mean, it's not like you would want anyone else playing this part. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she has just like strong black mom energy.
She does. She has strong black mom energy, and she could really be a villainess in a great way. And she was a little bit of a villain in this film, I think.
But in a very like realistic, authentic
very
way.
Very realistic. It's scarily authentic.
Yeah. Yeah, just like all up in their business, observing their marriage because she lives there.
Mm-hmm.
Always wants to put her two cents in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, cracking down on her daughter for what's going on in your house. Like, get it together. I taught you better than this. Like,
right.
I mean, she's very authentic, so it is what it is. I wish she had a little bit more of like a harder stance against Henry.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And trying to hold him accountable more than just her daughter. I wish even just like one or two more lines about that would have been just add a little bit more balance.
Yeah.
And have, you know, someone else on Julia's team.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they wanted to keep her character very traditional, just like the focus, daughter, your focus is on the household. Remember that. That was what my focus was. Now I pass that on to you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's like, again, most of the women we've talked about, like, there's certainly more that could have been done with her. Again, we could have given her a friend in the church. This is a community she's like been connected to for longer than anyone else in the movie, but they sort of were like, no, we're just going to sort of have her scold Whitney Houston in the kitchen every 20 minutes or so. I liked her scene with Denzel. That was fun.
Oh, and she's like, walk me over to the neighbor's house. Stay away from my daughter.
Yeah, I'm like, should they hook up? Like, I'm open to what this looks like.
Pimping Denzel out.
I know, we're trying to get him to anybody.
I mean, well, okay, when we first meet Marguerite, when Jeremiah's like giving voiceover and like introducing all the main characters, he says something like, and that's my grandma. Mm-hmm. Everyone says she needs a man, whatever that means. And it's like, okay.
I forgot about that.
I mean.
Oh, God.
It was so unnecessary.
Very.
Yeah.
Another unnecessary dig. Like,
an unnecessary dig, but also a very true aside that people are in the church are looking at, she needs a man. She's still single. We haven't hooked up with anybody yet. She's single again. What happened to the last one? Like, that's also so true.
And then I want to list off a few, because horny angel representation is important. There's been a lot of horny angel erasure.
Oh, I was going to say, are there other horny angels? I can't think of another horny angel.
No, I'm saying that it's been nothing but erasure until this movie.
Horniness is beautiful and from heaven.
Exactly right.
It's why people exist.
The scene where Dudley tells Julia to buy a negligee. Because he's like, oh my God, you would look so hot in this.
Oh my God.
For your husband, but it would be so hot.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't know. I'm looking for a present from my son. And he's like, oh, okay, never mind. Never mind. Never mind. Never mind. The moment is past.
Laying it on thick.
And then the scene toward the end where Dudley's looking at Julia and Henry's wedding photo, and then he uses his like angel powers to replace Henry with his own image
himself.
And then God gets pissed off and like thunder happens and he's like sorry. Maybe they'll reunite in heaven or purgatory or wherever.
I don't want to go to that version of heaven. It sounds stressful.
I hope he gets another assignment and gets to come back and somehow escapes.
I also wanted to shout out Hans Zimmer wrote the score for this movie.
Yeah.
Wild.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I mean, the music is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Wow.
And then I also, just to point out, like, there are a handful of characters that make, like, fatphobic comments or jokes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That just feels very of the era for like casual fat phobia to be just so normal in a movie of this time.
When did fat phobia stop in films? Has it stopped in
never?
Films? Never, right? Okay.
It's still there.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Does anyone have anything else they want to talk about?
I just thoroughly enjoyed watching this. I have to just like think about, because this came out when 1996. Mm-hmm. I was even just looking at everyone's career at this time. Mm. Like Denzel had just won the Oscar for Glory, mm-hmm. Best Supporting. We had got to see him as Malcolm X, Philadelphia. Like we know Denzel now, that 20 whatever 30 years later, but he was kind of, I don't want to say up and coming, but he was still in the early stages of his career. So to see, just to have that context. And then Whitney, too, she was just in The Bodyguard. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Courtney B. Vance, I think, had won a Tony already by now for Fences. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Lewis is in a million movies by now. The cast is just really impressive. Like, it's just so super stacked, especially now in 2023, thinking about all these people's careers now. Mm-hmm. Just how special of a movie it was to have this like ensemble black cast. Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm lukewarm on the Reverend Henry character, Courtney B. Vance, like his speech at the courthouse and then his sermon, especially at the very end of the movie, I was like, do I believe in God now? Like he is making a believer out of me.
He's so good, especially at the end where it's like a 4-minute speech where, again, the takeaway from that speech is that he's not going to have the church turned into a mall. And you're like, the fact that that's this powerful, in spite of you doing so little, is really impressive. It's a testament to him.
Yeah, he's the one who convinces Joe Hamilton to not tear down the church, even though an angel had showed up the night before to be like, I'm going to send you to hell if you do this. But Joe Hamilton's still like there to be like, well, this is the last little sermon before I rip this place down. And then he's like, wait a minute. No, that the Reverend giving his sermon, it feels like that's what convinces him to change his mind.
Yeah, I think definitely as problematic as Henry's character is in being the neglectful husband, father, all this, I think his character is probably fully performed the best, I think, in terms of he really does a great job, or maybe the writing is a great job, of showing him as like the Black lead of the church and how much they really belong to the community, and that struggle of, yeah, he has a wife, he has kids, but he also belongs to everybody else.
Yeah.
And the seeing him kind of drowning in that, I empathize with him as terrible as he is as a husband and so many other things. You can see his exhaustion of like, I just want to sit down and maybe, yeah, I just want to be a family man, but instead I belong to everybody in the community. And I think Courtney B. Vance does a great job at bringing that, and the writing brings a great job of bringing that to life. I wish, obviously, we could have saw more of that out of Whitney's character as the wife of that person, because that is a whole other lived experience, being the first lady of a big church. So that's what's disappointing, particularly since it's called The Preacher's Wife. You would hope that we could see more her story. But I will give Courtney B. Vance and his character that credit. That felt very, I was able to empathize with him on that.
Yeah. Well, that was a question I had, as far as, because this is a movie adapted from two different kind of source materials, both properties, you know, the 1947 movie cast, creative minds behind that, all white people. The novel, oh yeah, came out in 1928, again, by Robert Nathan. He's a Sephardic Jew. I assume, because this movie, again, feels very authentic, I was like, oh, this must just be like an original unadapted thing. But to learn that it was adapted from source materials that were not written and created by Black creators, and because this particular movie, Preacher's Wife, was written and directed by white filmmakers, is there anything that feels like inauthentic to these Black characters, the Black community, the Black experience, or does it feel like they pretty much nailed it? Because that's always a concern I have, where it's like, you know, a Black cast, but the top creative voices,
white people
with money,
that's a great question. I think they nailed it, honestly.
I was going to say no. Even the landlord's character, him, it's actually really important that he was from the hood and acts like that. That's actually like a really common thing that I think happens across many ethnicities, but definitely in the Black community. Where once you get money, you're just willing to step on whoever because you can't go back. You can't even imagine going back to the place that you came from. So, yeah, I would say nothing's really missing, which is remarkable.
Which, I mean, Natasha, you said it earlier too, is like, I'm sure that Denzel Washington's production company being so like integral to this movie getting made.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. And Denzel Washington like made good on that statement he made in 96 of like centering Black characters and getting Black creatives involved. I was looking over just the roster of movies that he's produced or his production company has made over the years, and it's like awesome.
Yeah, I would not have guessed this was written and directed by white people.
Never. Yeah.
I would not have thought. I was surprised when I read that. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And that was after the fact. So, yeah, I think they definitely nailed it for sure.
Okay, good to know.
Also, annual shout out to how many classic Christmas songs and stories are written by Jewish people. It's like,
that's wild. Right?
Yeah. Irving Berlin, White Christmas, The Christmas Song, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Silver Bells, Winter Wonderland, I'll Be Home for Christmas, all written by Jewish composers. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Shout out.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Wow, that's a really cool fact. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of my favorite facts to revisit every Christmas. Yeah. Cool. But does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
I think it does, between Julia and Marguerite in a small handful of exchanges. They are usually talking about Henry or Dudley or Jeremiah. But I think there's an exchange where, in the context of this conversation, is still like Marguerite being like, you need to get your household under control. And Julia doesn't want to hear it. So she's like, okay, you can watch me leave and you can look at my behind. And she's like, I gave you that behind. So they're talking about Whitney Houston's butt. And that does pass the Bechdel test.
That passes.
That does pass. Okay. That's, and that's an important exchange.
Yeah.
That actually is for their relationship. So it does pass. It does. I mean, like this whole conversation speaks to, I think there were plenty of opportunities for the women in this story to interact more and have more meaningful relationships. So even though it does pass, I would say, like, spiritually, not a very strong pass. We could have you know, had way more women talking to each other.
For sure.
But what about the world's most important metric, which we made up?
Yes, it's the nipple scale, our scale of 0 to 5 nipples, where we examine the movie through an intersectional feminist lens. I would give this, man, I wish I could go higher, but I feel like I could only give it like 2 nipples because while it does feel like it really represents the Black community and the Black church authentically, I wished for so much more for the Julia character. I wished for more from Loretta Devine's character. But again, especially Julia, where the movie's called The Preacher's Wife. In theory, it should be kind of her doing more stuff and being able to make more active choices. And instead, she, again, just ends up kind of being the object of affection of Dudley the angel, Dudley the horny angel. And
wow, so sing that to the tune of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Dudley the horny angel
wants to buy you lingerie.
He will take you ice skating. Okay, so the relationship between Julia and her husband Henry just feels like there's not nearly as much of an arc as I would have wanted, because she's putting in all of the effort into their relationship and to like being a parent to their child. And Henry is kind of neglecting his family unit and paying way more attention to the community, which of course is important, but like he needs to find a balance. And I don't think he does by the end of the movie. And that makes me feel really sad for Julia. But the movie ends on a note of like, no, everything's fine now. And I'm like, but is it?
Okay.
So, and again, I just found Julia to be underdeveloped. I wish she had just more of an exterior life and just we knew more about her and what her hopes and dreams were, you know, outside of her relationship. But, you know, I love to watch Whitney Houston sing. I love to watch Jennifer Lewis.
Which is ultimately what this movie is all about.
Which, exactly, basically.
If you take out the singing scenes, the movie's 45 minutes long. But yeah, I just, there was a lot to be desired for me for Julia's character. So I'll go with 2 nipples and I will give 1 to the late, great Whitney Houston and I'll give the other to, well, I'll split the other between Jennifer Lewis and Loretta Devine.
Nice.
I'm going to go a little higher. I'm going to go 3. I think that for all the reasons we discussed, this movie is not, in spite of the title, I feel like we see this pretty often, in spite of the title, is not actually a movie about a woman. It's kind of a movie about two men and how they feel about this woman. We are not really clued in to how Julia feels at length at any point. And I think that her takeaway at the end of the movie being like, you should be happy, you should be satisfied with what you have, Merry Christmas, is like a little bit grim. And just the fact that there's so many talented Black women in this movie and we don't really get to see them be around each other, which again, like, especially at the lack of Loretta Devine and Whitney Houston the year after Waiting to Exhale, it just boggles the mind. But there's a lot that this movie has going for it that is like extremely like a step forward in the Christmas movie genre at all. Having a huge movie center an all-Black cast, I think, especially in at this point in time, was like really cool, especially because Denzel Washington was so integral in making it happen and having his production company involved. This movie is directed by a woman. You don't see that very often still.
Yep.
granted, Penny Marshall is obviously a white woman, but you don't see women directing big budget movies frequently mm-hmm. at now. And mm-hmm. so I'm maybe sliding up the rating a little bit because Whitney Houston wasn't in many movies and I treasure each and every one of them.
Yeah.
Even mm-hmm. though Brandy Cinderella is still the best one to me.
Oh my God, yes. Damn, I need to rewatch that. I was just going to say rewatch that this weekend. Oh my God.
I feel like that has the energy of a holiday movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Yeah.
It's so good. So I'm going to give this three nipples. I'm going to give one to Whitney. I'll give one to Jennifer no offense to Jennifer. I'm going to give one to Loretta Devine. And then I'm going to give the last one to Sissy Houston, Whitney's mom. Hmm.
Nice. Okay, I can go. I'm going to go right in the middle, give it 2.5 nipples. I think, similar to what you just said, Jamie, it just feels like such a regression post Waiting to Exhale, which was such a powerful movie for women, mm-hmm. for black women, to see Whitney and Loretta in particular being so underutilized when mm-hmm. we know their potential was probably the most disappointing element of the movie. I will give a nipple to just a collective nipple for like the great cast of beautiful, powerful mm-hmm. black women. Mm-hmm. Again, sadly underutilized, but just so appreciate their presence. Just being iconic, just being in this movie all together is really special. I'd give one definitely to Whitney for providing us this amazing album that we are all still bumping every Christmas morning, probably till the end of time. And then I'll give my half to, I guess I gave one to Whitney already, but I was going to say for Julia's character getting to have even just a tiny Denzel dalliance and take back a little bit of power, even if it was just a smidge. I'm going to give it to her.
Just a light dalliance. Mm-hmm.
They're touching in the ice skating scene. They're like holding on to each other. And that is nice. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice. So shout out to her. Give her a little laugh for that. Mm-hmm. But you, Justine?
I'm going to give 3 nipples. I agree with everything that you guys said, but I do think that there is a world where we could remake this film where the gospel choir goes to the McDonald's Gospel Fest and wins $1 million. And that's how they save the building.
The church.
And we can get Hamilton out of here and we could just get the character out of here and we can just make Whitney be the savior of the church for her father and for her husband. She could be like, y'all can't live without me. Bam.
I'm so on board for that.
Right? I love that. I think we should make another one. The Reverend's Wife. That's what we'll make.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine? Choir. Like Kiki Palmer.
Was it the choir and the praise dance team?
Yeah. Oh, my God. With the praise dance. A liturgical dance team. Please.
Yes. Have to.
It would be so good. So the fact that there's room for that, I love it. I'm going to give one nipple to Whitney. I'm going to give one to Penny Marshall because as she is a white woman working on a black film, there haven't been many white directors working with black production companies. So mm-hmm. I applaud her for that. And I'm sure she had to do a lot of research. And it shows. So thank you, Penny. Yeah. And then I'm going to give one to Loretta Devine for being the best.
Oh, yes, simply the best. Well, Natasha and Justine, thank you so much for joining us for this wonderful discussion. And come back anytime.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having us.
This was so fun.
Yeah.
Where can people check out your podcast? Tell us more about it. How do people follow you online, etc.?
Yeah. So we're 2 Black Girls, 1 Rose. Mm-hmm. You can find us everywhere podcasts are found. We primarily cover reality dating shows. Mm-hmm. We are currently covering The Real Housewives of Potomac, which is some good mess. It's really a deep dive into female friendship.
I was gonna say it's very feminist of all the Housewives franchises.
So a little bit of dating and relationships and marriage, but we're definitely deep diving into just like sisterhood and themes of female friendship. We've been covering The Bachelor for the past 6 years, currently wrapping up Golden Bachelor and Bachelor in Paradise, which we do in our Patreon. Patreon.com/2BlackGirls1Rose for all our video and special bonus content. And find us on all social media platforms, 2 Black Girls, 1 Rose.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Have you, either for the show or just in your personal lives, watched the dating show Naked Attraction?
No. I can't with the derobing dating shows. That or the siblings involved.
The line needs to be drawn somewhere.
You know what I'm saying?
It's my new obsession. I love Naked Attraction.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God. I need to give it a watch.
It's a UK-based show.
It's a UK,
right?
Yeah, where people get naked and you see everything. They're not blurring things out. Oh, there's God. No.
What?
Little, I couldn't. You're seeing. Yeah. Oh, you're seeing dicks. Oh, you're seeing.
Oh my God.
Oh, you're seeing titties.
I was like, wow. I'm not a prude, but I was like, no.
Yeah, it's on HBO. So if
okay, there we go. It keeps getting recommended.
I'm a fan.
It keeps getting recommended. Like, you don't watch that one? I'm like, no, I've been actively avoiding it. But damn.
Does everyone not die of exposure? That's like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're indoors, so it's. I'm sure it's warm. In any case, thank you again so much for being here as our guests. You can follow us on Instagram mostly these days at BechtelCast. You can subscribe to our Patreon/Matreon at patreon.com/BechtelCast. You get 2 bonus episodes every month plus access to the entire back catalog, all for $5 a month.
And you can get our merch over at tpublic.com/TheBechtelCast. And with that, let's let Denzel Washington, Men in Black style, wipe our brains and go about our Christmas with our lives completely unchanged. Did he even do a good job? We don't know.
Or was he just horny? We'll never know. All right. Bye.
Bye.
The BechtelCast is a production of iHeartMedia, hosted by Caitlin Durante and Jamie Loftus, produced by Sophie Lichterman, edited by Mo Laborde. Our theme song was composed by Mike Kaplan, with vocals by Catherine Voskresensky. Our logo and merch is designed by Jamie Loftus, and a special thanks to Aristotle Acevedo. For more information about the podcast, please visit linktree.com/BechtelCast.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Leesa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.